Nothing else is what makes him impure. Wicked designs come from the deep recesses of the heart. From our desires in the heart. Acts of fornication, theft, murder, just like St. Paul. See, this is where St. Paul got it all from. Adulterous conduct, greed, maliciousness, deceit, sensuality, envy, blasphemy, awe, and obtuse spirit. All these things come from within. And they are what render a man impure. You see? Elsewhere, he will, like St. Paul, take both sides. He says, good, well, we already quoted, by their fruits you will know them. The good tree produces good fruit, and the evil tree produces evil fruit. And so it comes from the heart, from the desires. We're here at the origin of all activity. Now, we've already examined this somewhat. Recall, we're repeating and bringing it all together for you. When we spoke about motives and attachments, they are from within. And it's those things that keep us away from God, these natural attachments. Nature is good, but the attachment to the things of nature is not good to those who wish to love God with their whole heart. And the natural motives will take us away from God. Now, within us there's a zone of freedom that we spoke up to. Now, that's where the struggle is, and that's where the spiritual combat takes place, in that zone of freedom within us. Our nature is good, our talents are good, our activities are good, but it's how we use them and why we use them where the struggle takes place. We have this inner freedom, this secret zone within us, where we can formulate our own desires, our own ambitions. We had that corroborated so beautifully. We heard the author quote Viktor Frankl yesterday in the book there, in explaining the what went on in the slave camps, and that's where he discovered all this. This is where it was came to so dramatically to him, and we had the living proof of that in a man like Maximilian Kolbe. That he became a saint in the same situation which made those Nazis into devils, veritable devils. The extreme is so great. So this is Jesus, you see. This what comes from within. This is what. So we, and here we then, we can, as Catholics, affirm all the evil, but we must ourselves take responsibility. God didn't do it. God gave us capacity to do many things. He gave us this area of freedom in which we can make our own decisions, and we're responsible. And we're responsible for all the evil. Of course, I know some of it becomes compulsive after a while, but in the beginning, it's not. If we have a compulsion like alcoholism, you see, then that's because we've lost control somewhere along the line. We have not been formed morally. But here's where we wish to have our formation, in the heart, in the desires. Here is the area, I emphasize again, in which moral formation takes place. In the area of desires. St. John of the Cross talks about the first 10 chapters of the Ascent of Mount Carmel is about the purification of the desires. With his scriptural psychology, he says, he gives the result of desires in us. He says that the desires, undisciplined desires, natural desires, even though nature is good, that undisciplined desires torment us. Have you ever been tormented by a desire that you couldn't fulfill? Undisciplined desires torment us, he says. They weaken us, he says. They weaken us morally. They pull us away from God. They pull us towards sin, because they pull us towards creatures, and the love of creatures will lead to sin. So our human desires, our natural desires, torment us. We can't satisfy them. They itch and itch and itch, and we can't satisfy them. And we can't live a spiritual life as long as we're tormented by these desires. We can't pray. We can't be tranquil. We can't be happy with others. They weaken us, he says. They defile us. They lead us into sin. He gives all these effects. Then one of the worst is they blind us. They blind us to the truth of moral good and moral evil. Desire is the father of the thought. That's an old saying. Desire is the father of the thought. We think as we desire. We can rationalize our desires very easily. And then it blinds us to moral good and evil. Here's a good illustration of that, how it leads to sin. I think I have it here. Yeah, this is from a novel by a woman by the name of Rosemary Macaulay. And yeah, late Rose Macaulay. The scene in question finds her poking through the ruins of a Byzantine church in Trebizond. I don't know where Trebizond is, but it's in the east somewhere. Now, she is speaking herself, Rose Macaulay, on this trip. She's a Catholic woman who's having an affair with another man. Here's how sin occurred. This is a good psychological analysis of sin by this novelist. It took me some time to make out the Greek inscription. Which was about saving me from my sins. They were looking to the church. And I hesitated to say this prayer because I really did not want to be saved from my sins. Not now. Anyhow. It would be too difficult and too sad. And then the author has a parenthesis that she was at this time having an affair with someone else's husband. And then she resumes, I was getting into a stage when I was not quite sure what sin is. See, it blinds us. I was in a kind of fog, drifting about without clues. And this is liable to happen when you go on doing something. It makes a kind of a confused sort of twilight in which everything is blurred, and the next thing you know, you might be stealing. Or anything, because right and wrong have become things you do not look at. You're afraid to, and it seems better to live in the blur. Then comes the times when you wake up suddenly and the fog breaks and right and wrong loom sharp and clear through the fog, like peaks of rock. And you see for an instant that you're on the wrong peak. And you know that unless you manage to leave it now, you may be marooned there for life and forever. Then, as you don't leave it, the mist swirls round you again and hides the other peak, and you turn your back on it, and you try to forget it all, and you succeed. Our desires blind us. Paul. So the ultimate Christian discipline is in the discipline of the desires. The scholastics used to distinguish two kinds of desires. I think I've mentioned that already. It's good to know. The one kind of desires they called delectable desires or pleasurable desires, like reaching for an ice cream or a glass of beer. That's an effortless attempt. It's so pleasurable that it's effortless. The other kind of desires they call, on the opposite side, are the irascible desires. irascible, I-R-A-S-C-I-B-L-E. They're the desires for something which is difficult to gain, like picking a rose out of a thorn bush you have to crawl into. Those are good examples to keep in mind. There are certain different obstacles. One obstacle for some of the things we want is hard work, industry, perseverance. Say a person seeking a career, seeking a vocation, to be a religious or a priest or a doctor or a lawyer. There's a long, hard discipline there, or an artist. It's not going to be, you can't grab it easily like the glass of beer. And then there's another kind of difficulty that occurs, and that's the difficulty of rivalry and conflict with others who are after the same thing, seeking the same goal. And you come into conflict with them, and they, your neighbors, your friends, your own family perhaps, become obstacles and difficulties. Now, these are the two kinds of desires. In the search for the pleasurable things, we need to learn the virtue of temperance. But remember, we said yesterday that temperance, as usually understood, is a natural virtue described by Aristotle. But here also, faith changes things, and we have to live by faith. So Christian temperance is like St. Paul said when he said, I chastise my body and bring it under subjection, lest perhaps when I have preached to others, I myself should become a castaway. That's what we might call supernatural temperance. It goes a little deeper. It cuts deeper into our desires. Or like the lives that these people were reading about lived. Cut really deep. This is supernatural temperance. So when we talk about temperance, we need to make that distinction, or any virtue, between that which is comes from reason only and that which is illuminated by faith. I have given up all things. You see, the pagan says that virtue stands in the middle, being moderate. Well, I count all things as loss and dung, says St. Paul. The pagan would think that was immoderate. But St. Paul thinks he is practicing virtue, according to Christ. I think I count all things as loss and dung. So there's quite a difference between Christian temperance and pagan temperance. One word can cover two very different things. And of course, usually, even Catholics study this in college in a book of Aristotle or about Aristotle, and so they never outgrow the notion of merely natural temperance. And that's why we can be intemperate and think we're still being. Of course, to be temperate in the natural plane is very difficult indeed. Baudelaire, who was a fallen away Catholic, a Satanist, he said, I thought by moderation to overcome evil. Precisely by this moderation, he said, I was overcome by evil. Moderation, pagan moderation, lets you too much play, too much leeway, like when you have too much play on the steering wheel of your car and you can't turn it accurately. So moderation is not a safe guide. It gives you too much leeway, too much play. How many cocktails is moderate? Practically no one at a cocktail party is moderate. See. So now, that requires temperance and chastity. Chastity is a virtue of temperance in regard to sexual matters. Now, then the virtue which regulates us against human opposition. When we find human opponents, the human difficulties, the rivals and the opponents, what we're doing, that is the virtue, we said, of meekness, to be able to accept disappointment, deprivation, insult, frustration from others without hating them, loving them, caring for them. This is Christian virtue, even your enemies, to love them. You see, So this is the kind of discipline we need to live an upright Christian life. On the one hand, temperance in all things. And all our desires to be tempered by a supernatural temperance and chastity. On the other hand, the desires strengthened, those irascible desires that are difficult to fulfill, by zeal, by determination, by perseverance, and curbed by meekness and love of neighbor and love of enemy. This is the heart of moral formation. This is where it should be located and carried out. And this is a lesson which we were taught in school in Scholasticism, but I guess I didn't see it really brought home properly until I read the life of Gandhi, because he got the same kind of wisdom from the Oriental sages, and he practiced it. And he lived it. And he said rightly, so he said, anybody can do what I've done, because it's a human achievement, basically and essentially, to regulate and channel these desires. And that's the difference between a saint and a devil, one who can channel the desires and perfect them, and one who leaves the desires grow wild and carry him or her away completely. Now let us go down and pray and then we'll have lunch.